In any event, you alluded to that and a number of these others. We'll see what happens, but perhaps there's going to be more discussion of bevacizumab. But I would like you to kind of go through the data that's out there. You mentioned the GOG-218 study, also the ICON-7 study about the issue of bevacizumab in first-line therapy, sort of what was found in terms of the clinical research. And then maybe if you could talk a little bit about how the regulatory agencies responded to it and how it really affected clinical practice.
Okay, so we had two trials, 218 and ICON-7, that ran more or less at the same time, and were in fact published contemporaneously. But they were different in the sense that ICON-7 used half the dose of bevacizumab, 7.5 milligrams per kilogram, as opposed to 15 milligrams per kilogram, and gave the maintenance of the drug for 12 months as opposed to 15 months. But both trials showed overall there was improvement in progression-free survival of a matter of a few months if you gave bevacizumab with chemotherapy and then as maintenance afterwards. And the maximum difference in progression-free survival was just at the point where you're stopping the bevacizumab, which in itself has raised some questions as to whether the drug should have been given for longer. But notwithstanding that, neither of the trials showed an improvement in overall survival. And I think it was this difference that led to a difference in the regulatory review, if you like, across the Atlantic. And of course, it was only 218 that was submitted as the definitive trial to the regulators in Europe, the EMA. ICON-7 was not submitted for regulatory approval, although the data, of course, were made available. And the EMA decided at the time to grant a license for bevacizumab on the basis of this progression-free survival difference, even though there was no difference in overall survival. But my understanding is that in the US, it was not even submitted to the FDA because at the time, the FDA would not entertain a situation where you saw an improvement in progression-free survival of a matter of a few months without any improvement in overall survival. So we had this difference across the Atlantic that lasted for several years.
When you move away from the regulatory issues and just sort of take a look at your vision of the risk-benefit, how do you see it from a patient point of view?
Well, my experience of using bevacizumab has generally been good. I mean, there are patients in whom I've had to stop the drug early because of side effects, hypertension, proteinuria, probably being the most common. But the majority of patients will tolerate it well. It's inconvenient to come in every 3 weeks to have an infusion, and that is an effect on their quality of life that they have to come up to a hospital or a facility to have an infusion. But generally speaking, it's well tolerated. But the dropout rate of both the trials, there were patients dropping out through toxicity, through the fact they were fed up with the treatments before they finished their 15 months or 12 months. But it's a manageable drug.